Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week we talk to Commander Brian Fitzgerald of the Irish Naval Service about the work of the LE Ethna in the Mediterranean and the National Maritime College of Ireland when we met at the recent Ocean Wealth Conference in Ringaskiddy. We hear from photographer Gareth Craig of Photosail. And John Creedon talks to Seascapes about a new television series on RTE1 on the Wild Atlantic Way, which starts this Sunday. First on Seascapes, to an Olympic sailor who swapped her laser for a moth at the recent Volvo Dunlera Regatta. She is Annalise Murphy, who was home on a brief stopover as she prepared to drive to Denmark. We spoke to her about her interest in the moth.
It's been brilliant. We've had a lot of fun. There's 8 of us racing. So we're actually not too, you know, a bigger fleet than I think everyone expected. We sailed inside the harbour for the first 2 days. And then we were outside yesterday, which was fun to kind of get out into the bay. I think all the other boats might be jealous of us seeing us fly around doing 25 knots, but it's just been great fun. It takes quite a while to learn how to sail them. You spend most of your first 6 months half capsized, half sailing. So it is a sort of, you just have to persevere and just keep on going. But once you kind of crack it, then it starts to become more like normal sailing. But the initial learning curve, it's everything's quite different. Things that you do in a normal sailing boat, it's the opposite in the moth. But once you then start to get the hang of it, then it starts to become more like normal sailing, and then you can start to look at tactics again and not just how to not swim around the race course. My moth sailing is purely my hobby. It's something I do for fun just because I love it so much. I come in and I've got a smile on my face every day when I come in from sailing. So it's I consider it completely different to my laser sailing. Laser sailing's my job and I love it as well, but you know, it's a lot more serious. Well, my moth, I just go out to have a bit of a blast, try and want to get to 30 knots. So it's just to have a bit of fun, basically. We use apparent wind because we're on hydrofoils. So once it gets over sort of 6 or 7 knots, we're actually doing 14 knots upwind and 20 knots downwind, even though you're only in 6 or 7 knots of wind speed. So it means that it actually, the windier it gets, you don't start going that much faster. You're nearly always going fast, which makes it so much fun. That's kind of the thing. It's not, you know, on light days it's boring and on windy days it's exciting. It's exciting the whole time, which is, I think, one of the sort of reasons people like it so much.
So what do the next few months hold for you then in terms of sailing?
I've got my European Championships in Denmark in a couple of weeks' time, so I'm driving there on Tuesday. And really looking forward to that. I've been kind of sailing okay this year, so hopefully that can go well. And then there's the Olympic test event in Rio in August, which is going to be a big one because it's, I guess, prepping for the Olympics next year, seeing how everyone's racing, and hopefully I can go and get a good result there. And then my World Championships are in November, so it's kind of a long year. It hasn't really stopped, but it's fun, so it's good. I've had a great time the last few days catching up with a lot of old friends that some I haven't seen in years, and it's great to be able to be at home and do this regatta because most of the time I'm away and I don't get to see everyone. Everyone kind of knows what I'm up to, but I don't know what anyone else is up to. So it's kind of nice to be able to see what everyone else is doing with their lives.
Annalise Murphy, and we wish her well in Denmark. Next here on Seascapes, to the Wawa, as Pat Kelly from Ballyhadreen calls it, or the Wild Atlantic Way. Creedon's Wild Atlantic Way is a new three-part series on this coastal route that has captured people's imaginations and can be seen on RTE1 television on Sunday evenings at 6:30. John got to set foot on the fastness for the lone rock, Carrigainer, which features in a fine photo by Brian Carlin on the cover of Sailing By, celebrating 25 years of Seascapes. John described that experience.
Yeah, we have 2,500 kilometres of roadway. along the coastline. I was thinking of Norway when I was doing some of this, because I remember being in Norway years ago and someone told me, you know, we have the second longest coastline in the world. And I was going, no, you couldn't have. Yes, 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 second to Canada. When you consider all the fjords and everything else, I didn't realise how many peninsulas and headlands we have in this country. So 2,500 kilometres of road. And whatever about the Wawa, I'd like to think that by the time I finished, it was the Wild Atlantic Way. Because we had great sport from start to finish, starting in Kinsale and finishing in Malin Head. So it's a fair old trek. Well, as you said, we managed to land on it, which was a privilege, and we managed to get off it, which was a godsend, because we had very poor visibility on the day. We had a fantastic pilot, and Irish Lights got us out there, and I met... You know, when I look back in this, Marcus, already I'm feeling nostalgic about the people I've met, and this is just in the past 2 months. One of the legends for me of this trip is Neely Riley. He's the light attendant, has been with Irish Lights as a career man. He still loves it. He still sees the romance, and he said to me, I said, how do you view it out here? He said, with awe. He said, which I expect is a mixture of fear and respect, he said. So he absolutely loves the water. The way he spoke about the lighthouse in particular, he looked up at it at one stage and he said to me, you know, John, he said, if they built this in Athlone, it would have been some feat of engineering. But Jesus, to build it out here on a rock 100 years ago. And then he went on to say, he said, you know, he said, they had to build it to last, but they didn't have to build it so beautiful. But they did. And inside, I love boats, I love ships, I love galleys, I love ship design. I just think it's so clever, so compact, so neat. And a lighthouse is just like that. I asked Neely, what was the strange thing about going back on land again? And he said, corners. He's so used to everything being circular in a lighthouse.
So not alone did you go from the fastnet, but then you went to a place with corners, as they'd say, Kilcoe Castle, and down to a man who's been living here for quite a number of years and is very much a fan of our coastline.
When I was asked to give a wish list for this series, I specifically mentioned Jeremy Irons because I had met him, I had worked with him on a TV show in the past. I know the grow he has for Ireland and the respect he has for the place. And what crossed my mind was, as I left Kinsale, I thought, if 1601 Kinsale marked the demise of Gaelic Ireland and Cromwell uttered that blood-curdling cry about to hell or to Connacht, why is it that so many people from England in particular, but from all over, have actually chosen to live in the West amongst the rocks and the weeds and the waves of the West of Ireland? And that's the question I wanted to ask Jeremy, and he gave me the full answer. He's a man who loves sailing, he loves solitude, he loves wilderness, he loves culture, and he's absolutely rolling around in the greenery of West Cork down there. And he's like, I asked him, I said, Jeremy, you're just back from, he was just back from Hollywood the day I met him, and he was due to go to Cannes in 3 days. So I said, when you woke this morning in the castle, did you think, oh, I'm in Ireland? Or did you think, oh, I'm at home? He said, I'm at home. And the thing about it is, Jeremy, not unlike myself and a lot of other people who are looking with a kind of a suspicious eye at this whole idea of promoting the West of Ireland or perhaps over-promoting it, and he is aware of how delicate a balance there is between tourism, development, giving people work and a reason to stay in far-flung places along the West Coast, and also the balance between that and our ecology. It's a very, very delicate thing. And I sometimes think if you stick another 10,000 camper vans on that, there will be pockets along the Wild Atlantic Way which will be virtually impassable. And also, what about the people who live along the Wild Atlantic Way? They need to get their children to school in the morning as well. So the one plea I would have, and this is as an amateur eye, is we need a superhighway running from Letterkenny to Castletown Bear so we can service this beautiful part of our country. But we'll never get the fish out from small ports and so on if capacity keeps on increasing as it is. There, people are travelling in huge numbers, tourist numbers are up. So that for me is the big question, is can we manage it properly?
Of course, what we've also got, John, is what's going out on the coastline. And you've got the likes of Jim Kennedy, for instance, with Atlantic Sea Kayaking down in Baltimore. Fellows like that who been ploughing away at this for years. You also got out, obviously, in the Shannon Estuary and got to a place that is just visually stunning. But a place like Scattery is special, isn't it?
Stunning. And I had an absolute pet day the day I went to visit Scattery. My partner, Mairead, has often spoken about Scattery and a trip she made there years ago and said, oh, you love it, John, because she knows I love islands and I've done a lot of them. But I'd never been to Scattery. It's such a dainty little island. It's got the tallest round tower in Ireland. It's been fought over since time immemorial. The Vikings took it. The Native Irish took it back. The monks were there. It was sacked again. It is just a stunning little island. The day we arrived out there, we had blue skies. We had a carpet of daisies across the island. It was like John Hind, picture postcard. But the best bit about that day is I was travelling with the South Clare Rowing Club. And they're just a fabulous bunch of men for the most part. It's like a men's shed. They brought out the tiddy pot and we made tea on the island. What they have done, is remarkable. They went away and they tried to establish what was the native curragh for this area. And it was a boat called the Canoe. I suppose a variation on canoe. Further up the estuary near Limerick, you had the gandola, which was probably a variation on the gondola. But the canoe was their boat and it had become extinct. With the help of Richard from UCD, a folklorist, they went away and they got all the drawings, all the possible information they could, and they built a five-hand canoe. It's a long curragh, takes five people, and they built one. It worked beautifully. You could turn it on a threepence. So when they made one, they made a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth. Now, what will we do with these boats? They gave them away, free of charge, to neighbouring communities along the South Clare coast, thereby reopening a communication on the water between these five parishes that up to now would have waved at each other at the roundabout in Ennis because everybody turned to face the road about 50 years ago. And all of a sudden they've opened up a sea route. And for me, like the big question for me at the beginning was, is there an ancient Wild Atlantic Way? Is there some path that St. Patrick took up along the west coast? What's the Wild Atlantic Way? Within days I realised it's the Atlantic itself.
Ripples in the water of the rock pool sun, and the boats are in for winter. Donal an Coggy, will you marry me? Donal an Coggy, will you marry me? Donal an Coggy, will you marry me? Will I carry your three children?
Ripples in the rock pools, ripples in the sea, ripples in the sand dunes rolling into Connemara.
Between Spain, Portugal, Galicia, you've all that connection all up along the Atlantean seaboard. But there are so many connections. People from Dingle who've married people from Inishere. Why wouldn't they marry people from Killarney? Because they were going up and down to Inishere more often than they were going to Killarney. I was reminded of Bob Quinn's brilliant series, Atlantean, several times. Even in Galway, we did a lovely story. I thought, at first, I was raising an eyebrow. Quirky story. The time Columbus came to Galway. Oh, yeah. And as I gathered the evidence, I realised, well, why wouldn't he have been in Galway? You know, Lisbon would have been chock full of Irish sailors, professional sailors. And in his own writings, he credits the Norsemen of Limerick, is how he referred to them. Obviously, descendants of the Vikings who had settled in and around Scattery Island because they also took Scattery. So these were people with Scandinavian names who settled near Limerick and who still had a penchant for discovering what might be out on the Western waters. He cited Brendan, the Irish man who had also brought back claims that there was land in the Western Seas, and he recruited a man called Harris in Galway, and it's there in the Spanish Navy records. This guy Harris was put ashore by Columbus from the Santa Maria in Hispaniola, as it was Haiti, was it would appear was killed out there. But so like all that stuff of adventure, the whole coast is full of it. It's not made up stuff. It's how people have lived their lives there for centuries, you know. I made it all the way. There was that. There genuinely was that moment, not of triumph, but of thanksgiving, as I got my 2 feet onto Malin Head and stood where the Era sign is. You know where the word Era was marked out in stones. So I actually got to that point, which for many people marks the end of the journey. So there was a kind of a touch of a lump in the throat moment, not just for the scenery I'd seen, but mostly for the people I'd met. The people. I love the Irish, I really do. And we met so many great people. I had so many great days out with decent people, fishing with the lads from Belmuddet. We went out in fairly sloppy conditions and we caught a rake of pollock and brought them ashore, met a Sri Lankan chef on the beach who cooked them up for me in the van. So I had curried pollock with coconut breads on the beach. Where would you get it apart from Sri Lanka? So we did. North Mayo, I have to say, I have a particular draw for as well. Is there any wilderness left on the Wild Atlantic Way? There are small pockets, but there's a big swathe in North Mayo. I know you're fond of Black Sod and all up around there, and I've been there before, but up around Ballycastle, Belmullet. I know it's an invasive species, but for a man who was just travelling on my own in a van, the sight of the bog, the blanket bog in North Mayo, and these tufts of purple rhododendron, which were in flower when I was up there. All the flowers. We started out at the start of this journey with firs, and towards the end, the fuchsia was coming into bloom. I haven't seen the Montbretia just yet, but it's hard not to love this place. And hand on my heart, I've been lucky in so far as I've got out there to India and to the Middle East and China and Africa and all the rest of it. But I still have to find a place more beautiful than taking a turn in the road in West Kerry and spotting out around Slayhead and the Three Sisters or the hills in Donegal. I mean, it's beautiful. There was music commissioned specifically for the series, but the opening animation and the closing animation is a piece by John Spillane, The Wild Atlantic Way. And in that chorus, he kind of really captures it. I think for most of us, whether we're of the West or whether we spend summers in the meadow or on a boat with uncles in the West, he captures that brilliantly about children playing on beaches and about there is a healing for the heart, he says. And I know in my own case that if I get bogged down with everything else, work, ESB bills, this, that, the other, whatever it is, there's a turn on the road someplace and all of a sudden, bang, you get your first glimpse of the Atlantic. And for me, it just puts everything else in context, you know. RT doesn't seem so big. My ESB bill doesn't seem so big. There is something really healing, I think, about that part of the world.
There is a healing for the heart beside the blue. Western Ocean on golden strands where children play along the Wild Atlantic Way.
Music by the inimitable John Spillane. Creedence Wild Atlantic Way is on Sunday evenings at 6:30 on RTÉ1 television. And that music also features on a CD, The Wild Atlantic Way, a journey in Irish music, and features the cream of the crop, led by Francie Conway, Alton, Dervish, Rita Connolly, John McSherry and Sean Keane. And we have several copies for Seascapes listeners in our Seascapes competition on next Friday's programme. Well, from the Atlantic to the East Coast, and photographer Gareth Craig, whom we met a fortnight ago at the Volvo Dunlera Regatta.
We've actually had 2 days of heavy weather on Thursday, Friday. Great conditions yesterday with bright sunshine and quite a sea running. So a lot of the smaller boats were delayed going out, but it's been great. Three great days of racing so far, and great conditions for taking photos too. So it's been brilliant. A steady hand required, and I suppose 10 years experience helps, and just being able to live in a boat and be comfortable first and foremost, and not have to worry about what's happening to you, and just keep an eye out what's going on. But it's when you get conditions like we had yesterday especially, it's an amazing privilege to be out there. Just when you have an ordinary championship with one or two courses, it's easy to keep track of everyone, but with so many courses and so many boats, getting out and around everyone in the week it's fun but challenging. So you have to try and give everyone their fair share. I was out actually with the moths and the dinghies this morning, and even in light airs they were having great fun and zapping around all over the place, and Annalise's been having a mixed week, I think, but they're all enjoying themselves anyway. It's amazing, in the last about, well, I suppose it's 10 years now, the regatta has just become a real landmark in the calendar. People kind of orientate their season around it, and it's just, you know, it's something for everyone, from dinghy sailors and cruiser sailors to even, there's a lot, you know, down in the George now this afternoon, there's a family day going on, and you've got kids and running around the place and the barbecue going, and yeah, even, and there's ladies' lunch as well, so something to keep everyone happy afloat and ashore.
A note from a dear friend of the programme, Brian Trench, and he writes, an important piece of Dublin's engineering heritage, previously underwater, has been opened to the public view. The diving bell, designed by Bindon Blood Stoney, was used in deepening the river, building the quaysides and the deepwater port. It's been restored and erected on Sir John Rogerson's quay over a display area with panels explaining its design and use. Tribute was paid at the opening recently to Mary Mulvihill, who, as one of her last completed jobs before she passed away last month, Mary advised Dublin Port and Docks Board on this project and wrote the lucid texts in the display. A visit to the Diving Bell is strongly recommended, not least as an acknowledgement of Mary's major part in deepening awareness of our scientific and engineering heritage. Next, to the National Maritime College of Ireland, where at the recent Harnessing Our Ocean Wealth Conference, we spoke to Commander Brian Fitzgerald of the Irish Naval Service on the recent deployment to the Mediterranean and how the college is so important.
What we have here in Ireland, I suppose, is not just a national, but it's a regional and perhaps even a global asset, whereby the only college of its kind in the world, I understand, where you put the merchant mariners and the military mariners under the one roof. Now, what this resulted in was a relationship that cast these two normally disparate groups together. And with this cheek-by-jowl relationship and what we call the water cooler conversations, a relationship and a synergy grew up with a common central theme of maritime, and opportunities came in floods. And as a result of those opportunities and conversations, we broadened our net and brought in University College Cork with the Cork Institute of Technology, with the Irish Navy, and what emerged really was what I would call a kind of a quarter, a centre of maritime Ireland. Irish people live on an island, and I think it's a virtue of our history and as our birth as a state, in fact, where the British held so much control over the waters around Ireland, that it was only in recent years that Ireland woke up to its maritime sector. And just a little statistic I think that works for the Irish people is that 99% of our trade travels by sea, and therefore the sea corridors represent the arteries of commerce of the state. If anything happens to interrupt these arteries of commerce, Ireland will suffer an economic cardiac arrest, and therefore Ireland is utterly dependent on its maritime. We are so proud of the performance of the Elly Etna in the Mediterranean and her extraordinary number of rescues in this extraordinarily tragic situation where human life, I suppose, is being moved across frontiers that these people have no concept of. And for Ireland to bring our maritime domain awareness into this space that's full of worry and fear and danger, and actually hold out a hand and with utter competence and capability be able to assist in this extraordinary venture. I think Irish people have this connection that with those in peril on the sea, Ireland knows how to react. The Elly Niamh, one of our offshore patrol vessels, will depart here today. She will do a rendezvous with the Elly Etna in the Mediterranean, where they will complete a handover, and she will take up the baton from Etna to continue the work that's out there. This actually is bread and butter stuff to the Irish Navy. Most of our work is done over the horizon off the Irish coast in this extraordinary maritime jurisdiction where it is so, so busy. But to be able to do it in a kind of on a public stage and internationally, we're extremely proud that we're capable, ready, and in fact looking forward to it, to its continuance.
Commander Brian Fitzgerald of the Irish Naval Service. Our thanks to Leo Coy in Rosslare, who's dropped us a note about Ron O'Rourke, a native of Rosslare Harbour, who's just finished building a wooden fishing boat. The boat was launched last Saturday in Rosslare Harbour. It's a clinker-built boat, approximately 19 feet long, with a 6-foot beam. A beautiful construction. Ron has continued the fine tradition of boat building in the southeast. Also, in terms of new vessels launched, we wish all those involved with Sion Vara in Banagher all the very best. Noel Ryan and Willie Kirwan have been keeping us up to date on their progress, and great to see that they're on the Shannon in this beautiful vessel. The Dublin Dock Workers Preservation Society has been campaigning for over 5 years for a Dublin Port Museum to incorporate the stories of the men and women who worked in Dublin docks and the surrounding dockland industries. They would like to acknowledge the involvement of the Minister for Transport, Pascal Donoghue, and would like to thank Dublin Port Company for commissioning and paying for a report on the matter, which they believe is an important first step. If you wish to get involved in their campaign, which they believe has community, heritage, educational and tourist potential, they'd be delighted to hear from you. You can send us your details to seascapes@rte.ie and we'll forward them to the Dublin Dock Workers Preservation Society. The Wyora got off to a windy start off the Aran Islands earlier this week. Next year's West Coast Championship is destined for the Royal Western Yacht Club in Kilrush, and Seascapes plan to be there. More details on www.wyora.org. This week saw a flotilla of cruise ships visit Dublin Port, and you can see photographs by Dennis Horgan on the Seascapes webpage, plus the recent arrival of the L.E. James Joyce into Hall Bolan, the latest addition to the Irish Naval Service fleet. That is, before next year's delivery of what they're naming the William Butler Yeats. The Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Simon Coveney, TD, this week launched a public consultation on proposals to regulate non-commercial pot fishing. Commercial sea fishing is a highly regulated activity and sea fishermen must meet the requirements for a sea fishing licence, the requirement to fit out a safe and seaworthy vessel and the costs associated with both. A range of conservation measures apply to species fished by pots, including minimum landing sizes for crabs, minimum and maximum landing sizes for lobster, and a prohibition on the sale of lobsters which have been V-notched. The consultation paper describes the current regulatory environment and proposes a number of options for regulating non-commercial pot fishing. Preliminary input was sought from the National Inshore Fisheries Forum due to concerns expressed in a number of regions about non-commercial fishing activities. Submissions to the consultation can be made in writing or online at www.agriculture.gov.ie/non-commercial pot fishing consultation 2015. Next week here on Your Maritime Programme, we've copies of Slea on Atlantic Eoin, the Wild Atlantic Way CD, A Journey in Irish Music, and we'll be featuring many of the musicians who feature on the recording. We meet Rory Fitzpatrick, CEO of the National Space Centre, and discuss naval communications. Also on Seascapes, Hugh Oram on the bridge that was never built. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing. Thank you.